Which girl liked the opera?
That was Beulah.
Mm-hmm.
And well, she lived on 25th Street. Just before we got to Amsterdam Avenue.
Oh, we were up there.
We were up there. Mm-hmm. And she passed away. So all of them passed away and left me holding the bag. So I just said, okay, I get along all right. I don't care.
Did you used to go out with
Beulah? Oh, yeah. We used to go to a hotel and wives and things like that, you know.
That you couldn't bring her home because Lily...
Oh, no, bring her home. No, bring her home. You kidding?
When Lily she knew get Lily. Angry?
Oh, sure. I imagine she would.
You so, never checked it out, though, huh?
No. I left that behind me. See? Because if I was going out with one of them, I'd pick a time that I was working.
And so she tell you
that she never knew. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget. I was. I don't know whether I find the picture, but I see it now. The day that Hitler walked into Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm.
I was up in Nantucket, and. There was a German girl up there, and boy, we had ourselves a ball. We had ourselves a ball.
What did you do?
Oh, well, we went to bed, ate, slept, because I had nothing to do but just take care of the kids and kids that were going in camp or somewhere. I just had myself a ball.
Mm. So you mostly, in the early years, you would work taking care of these, taking care of kids, other people.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yep. You know the product Jean Nate?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I worked for her for 9 years. She was on 40th Street downtown. And there was a woman over top of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to run with that woman.
Oh, I see. So you go down and work for her and have
the sweetie upstairs.
Yeah. That was convenient.
Yeah. Jean, she got mad at me. She wanted to know why I go upstairs so much. I asked her, how did she know I went upstairs?
Mm-hmm.
She said, because I don't see you go out the door. Now you're messing in my business.
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll tell Lily and all you.
Yeah.
I just go up to see how she's getting on. And because Miss Adams, she was on the program of, what's that program with food?
She an older woman?
Yeah, she was older than that. But what's that food? What's that? Betty Crocker.
Uh-huh.
You remember Betty Crocker? And this woman used to advertise it all the time?
Oh.
Of the food of cake and all like that. Well, she was right over top of Jean Nate.
Mm-hmm.
See, I went to work for Jean Nate before she changed the name to Jean Nate.
I see.
Her name is Jean Nathan. I got a card and things home.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Right.
Anything I say, I can back up.
All right.
So, she got mad at me because I had to go in the hospital. I had, what is that thing now? That strangled your hernia.
Oh, right.
That's what it was. Hernia. I had a hernia. And that's why the doctor told me if I didn't get it done right away that day, 24 hours, so you'd be dead because it had strangled one of your intestines.
Mm.
I told him, go ahead.
Yeah.
And Jean gets mad at me. She says, you were running upstairs, up and down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't running up and down the stairs. Mm-hmm. I walked up and down the stairs, but I went to see the other lady.
She wasn't jealous, was she?
I don't know. I didn't get a chance. I never went back. After I got the operation, I had to stay off for a month. So I never went back. I was always doing something. I got a kick out of it. But I would, you know one thing?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it these days. Because these women are crazy.
Now, which one?
They break your neck.
Who?
Anybody. These lesbians now would beat your head in.
If you did what?
Or white and color. If they caught you going to bed tomorrow.
You think so?
Nah. They ain't got no better sense.
Many that I have met at the Estelle told me of a case. I was setting up there. There was woman was running around with another. Now, she's in with all of those political people that are office and all of them. So she said, just ask me, did I know the woman? I heard of her, but I didn't know. And she was running with another woman. And shot her head off. That's all they did. You let out beat your brains.
Well, now I know
tight
people.
They're very tight. And I know people that just walk off and leave you. But some of them ain't going to walk off and leave you. They're going to take a little piece out of your tail. See?
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I don't know.
Well, you would
like
know.
That.
You had listened. I'm older than you. I've been in that society.
But you're talking about these are political muckety mucks doing
Monkey the Monks is what I'm talking about. Monkey the Monks is what I'm talking about. They're Monkey the Monk on the outside and they're terrible on the inside. You wouldn't put them down. And these are the younger people that's coming up here now. These young people.
Younger than you and how in relation to me? Younger or older?
Yeah, they got to be in their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And coming on down to 30s.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take no for an answer.
Mm-hmm.
They knock your head off and hand it to you in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't bother going up to them. Not them. I wouldn't go with anybody younger than me. Would be foolish. Now I couldn't Estelle, I couldn't run with her too long because there's too many people involved in her life. You see, I would get nowhere if it started on me.
I
would ruin her because she's in the public side. She couldn't ruin me. She's in the public side, and that means that she, if this woman want to get something on her, and find that out, she'd burn up.
Unless she's willing to deal with it openly. What about that
she
possibility? How come?
Because she's got children.
They wouldn't like
it. Yes. Oh, yes. They wouldn't stand by her. No. Those that you won't stand by, you don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you keep your door closed.
Mm-hmm. You think it's any different in among black people than white people?
Six of one and half a dozen of the other.
Same difference.
That's right. Love ain't love, passion ain't the passion.
Mm-hmm. No, but I mean about the way people react to it.
That's same thing. Six of one and half a dozen of them.
How about
God, you see him? What's he trying to do? Beat his mommy? Ain't this a honey? Well, isn't this a boop? Is that the one I want? No, this is the one I think. Well, God,
they do look alike.
They are. They're two girls, and I think that's the mother. I don't know. This is one a little over a year old. Look how big she is. This one back here. One got the white brush. See, that one don't have a white front. She's saying, shut up. This one's looking. This one's looking. She's down here.
She'll want to jump up there in a minute. I know.
Be of much use is as a sort of beginning point, a sort of presumption, or possibly an absolute bedrock minimum or something like that. Basically, you have to take into account the circumstances of the individual bank, and they vary tremendously from one bank to another in terms of the portfolio, the liability structure, the management, and so forth, so that it really isn't feasible, I think, to come out with a fair and thoroughly workable single number that would fit reasonably in all situations. I think, however, that we may very well be able to come up with some kind of presumptive numbers, which would mean that you would start with this number, and this should be met in a well-managed bank, and that if there are any questions, the number might have to be altered somewhat, and if it's an unusually good situation, perhaps it might be altered somewhat in the other direction. But I think that's about as much as you could hope for, sort of a bright line down the middle of the road to give a little help in coming up with the final decision, because the facts do vary so much from one situation to another.
Capital adequacy and insider loans, two topics of concern for bank supervisory officials. What topics are of particular concern to bankers within the current economic slowdown? A pertinent discussion of that question is next on Bankers Audio Forum. For bankers themselves, operating in a shortage economy provides topics of concern just as significant as those facing supervisors. The effects of the energy shortage were widely discussed at both the National Credit Conference and at the more recent National Installment Credit Conference. There, our Bankers Audio Forum reporter talked with Dr. Paul Nadler, professor of business administration at Rutgers University. Dr. Nadler commented about his outlook for the future and the role bankers will play in adapting to the shortage situation.
Well, I'd say that we're going to see a change in the United States away from running away from our problems of the cities over to working on them, because we no longer can afford to just have that second houseway in the country and the recreational vehicle and the car all the time with all the gas, because it's going to be more expensive to get all of the gas, and also we can never be sure we can get all we want. And so we're going to see more of a nation in which we start working on tackling our problems rather than running away from them. And banking, of course, is going to be involved in financing this just the way it was financing the going away from our problems. This is the basic change.
What's Dr. Nadler's view of banking's role in helping to direct this change in attitude? Will it be a positive and concrete community program?
Well, there are two ways to look at it. First of all, banks have recognized that they have to have social goals. There was a time when you ask a bank, what's your social goals? They say, we have a Christmas party and we try to have an Easter picnic. Now we know that the bank has to be involved in financing the community, keeping the community alive. There's also a second pressure that banks know that if they don't do something to help the community, there's likely to be a change in law so that bank reserve requirements are based on assets, based on what they've done for the community, or public deposits will be based on what they've done for the community. And that being the case, you see more pressure, and the banks really are the leaders in fighting to rebuild our community. And now when you add on top of this the energy crisis, making it almost mandatory that we rebuild what we've got instead of running from it, I'd say the banks definitely will be in the forefront.
Translated into the language of day-to-day banking activities, Dr. Nadler's perspectives have specific applications.
Well, you see it in terms of bank lending, you know, whereas before you'd find that the mortgage lending would be on the house 30, 40 miles from where a guy works, now you'll find more interest in the house on a mass transit line or 20 miles or 10 miles from where a guy works. You'll see it in the financing of factories, where a bank will look askance at a factory that's a long way away from where people are, because you'll say, well, how are we going to get the workers to that factory? And more willingness to finance a factory even in a poorer area, but one that does have the supply of labor around it. And so it comes just in the common sense credit approach to the bank lending. But in terms of anything dramatic, I don't think we've seen it dramatic yet. I do think this. I think a lot of people think now that the boycott is over, that energy is going to be available, the whole thing is over, it was all trumped up. But two things are important. One, we'll never see energy as cheap as before for heating homes, for cars, and this is going to change the percentage of our income that goes into energy. And secondly, you're never going to be able to get energy with that absolute assurance that it'll always be there. You can't buy that house 70 miles away from town and be sure you'll always have the gas to go there every weekend when you want to.
The energy shortage has had an effect on delinquencies, with many bankers expecting the problem to increase. Dr. Nadler commented about a shift in public attitude, which he feels is contributing to this situation.
I think one of the most important changes we've seen is the public willingness to accept delinquencies. We have the ABA studies which show that the delinquency rates are way up, and the public has decided a different approach. Morality is dying. I don't know if Watergate has much to do with it or not, but people say, I'll be damned if I'm going to let the family go hungry to pay off the installment loan. And you find more people who are saying, you know, just let the bank suffer. Let them wait for their money. And you see the delinquency rate really soaring in the United States as we take a different attitude toward obligations. And now that we have installment credit as 16% of after-tax income, which is the highest it's ever been, this can be a dangerous force for the banks, and a lot of bankers are worried.
Does Dr. Nadler think that large and small banks will be affected equally by the delinquency problem?
No, for the reason that here you're dealing with a community status. And if a guy lives in an impersonal community and he defaults on a loan, who knows? But if he lives in a small town where the banker sees him every day and where he can't really escape, you've got the small town communication as a force maintaining his stature and his desire to keep his credit standing high. So I don't think the small banker is going to be hit as badly as the medium-sized and big one in this.
Nadler was then asked what steps bankers should take in the future to halt the increase in delinquent loans.
Well, there has never really been any effort made to let the public know what personal bankruptcy means, that it can really hurt a person, that he can be the sufferer from it. And so that the first thing we know is this. Education is one thing. Secondly, I think you're going to see more loans in which collateral is going to become important. You're going to see less willingness to make loans on big cars or where you count on the residual value of a lease. But I'd say more important is going to be a better knowledge of the people who are borrowing and an understanding of who still has this feeling of responsibility and who just says, well, to hell with it, let the bank worry.
Dr. Nadler presented a two-part plan for including energy-related questions in credit analysis.
Part one, figure out just how much of a man's income is going to go into energy, into heating, into transportation, how much recreation is going to become more expensive and how it's going to shift people's recreation. In other words, have an understanding of what a higher price of energy is going to do to the percentage of a man's budget that goes to each area. And then after that, just use standard bank credit techniques, recognizing that there has been a decided shift away from cheap energy to expensive energy.
Dr. Paul Nadler with comments on our shortage economy and ways in which bankers can operate effectively within that system. Our final report by Joan Byron features coverage of a recent ABA press conference.
To comply with federal regulations, our particular industry is going to be needing something like 42,800 minority and women managerial personnel, and we can only bring up through our ranks currently some 18,100 of those. So the need for leadership in our industry, with money being the lingua franca of the world, an important industry, is very great indeed.
A portion of Norman Ross's opening statement at a press conference in Washington, D.C. on March 20th. The ABA called the press conference to announce the award of grants totaling nearly $1 million to two minority universities. Howard University in Washington, D.C., and Texas Southern University in Houston will use the grant money over a five-year period to help establish centers of banking education. These centers will create a learning environment in the field of banking which will attract, train, and graduate highly qualified minority men and women for officer-level careers in banking. Norman Ross, Vice President of First National Bank of Chicago, chaired the ABA's Special Selection Committee for the grant program. I asked him to explain the program for us.
The program began in 1971, 1972, with a real need felt by members of the Urban Affairs Committee of the ABA, a committee that represents banks small and large from all across the country. And the need perceived was one for leadership, for growing needs of leadership coming from minority communities. We found that about half of the new college hires we had in banks, large and small, south, north, east, and west, were coming from black colleges. We thought it would be a very good idea if we were to add banking and finance to the secretarial programs, the business education programs, the accounting programs, the marketing programs that those schools had. So we came up with the idea of establishing two experimental centers of banking education at two black colleges. We ended up by sending out proposals to 85 different schools, predominantly traditionally black schools. we received returns from 38 of them. Excellent proposals were offered. We, with great difficulty, got that down to 7, and you've met our 2 winners. My hope is that maybe other industries as well will take a lead from what the American Bankers Association has done and set up similar schools in various minority schools around the country. The desire on the part of the students we met at these 7 schools for practical experience, for work experience, for internships, for turning the theory they learned about in the school books into practical experience, to test in the real world the things they were reading in the books, was palpable. You could cut it with knives. The need of so many of them, great majority of them on scholarships, for after-school work, for vacation work, and summertime work, and maybe going to school for 6 months in some cases, and working for 6 months, was so great that I would think that since there are so many extremely bright young pupils, that banks all across the country could really make, for their own benefit, a real program out of taking on as interns, taking on as summer employees, taking on as part-time employees, some of these bright young students of business and of accounting and of finance who are coming out of these minority schools. So there are all kinds of ways that the banking industry can benefit from the schools, and the schools can benefit from the banking industry.
Dr. James Cheek, the president of Howard University, agrees with Norm Ross on the benefits of closer relationships between banks and black colleges.
The black college remains a resource, a tremendously untapped resource that is just now being discovered by many elements of the business and commercial community. The every student who is enrolled in a banking program in a college, in my judgment, ought to have as a part of his training the practical experience gained from working in a real life banking situation. Banks should be encouraged, really, in those communities where black colleges are located, to develop programs with them, because the bank gets an advantage, as well as the institution getting an advantage. The bank has an opportunity to contribute to the development and enrichment of a school, which is more than just philanthropy. It's really an investment in the training of its own future manpower. And there's going to be more and more need for bringing blacks and other minorities into the banking industry.
Luzine Bickham, Dean of the School of Business at Texas Southern University, discusses the way in which the new centers will help meet the needs of the banking industry.
The advantage would be, of course, the availability of trained personnel from our institution. Well, we continue to hear some comments that, well, we're not able to find qualified minority people, but I think this is fast disappearing as an excuse, and that it would simply be the result of a lingering personal bias as to why a particular banking official would find it unable to find qualified individuals. But nevertheless, while we can say that there are qualified minority people, the supply still is inadequate. As a matter of fact, the list of interviewers, corporations who come to our campus, find it very difficult to understand, for instance, why sometimes their interview schedules are not filled, because the demand is so large for minority people in management positions that, on the other hand, the supply for well-trained people is still in short. So that the center itself will help to bridge the gap between short supply and expanding demand.
Texas Southern will use its grant money for faculty exchanges, scholarships, and the establishment of a research center. Dr. Robert Terry, Vice President for Academic Affairs at the university, explains the opportunities this will open for the students.
We believe that the opportunities which will be made available to our students who graduate in this program will be widespread, not only in the Houston community, but throughout the nation. And they will be able to work wherever well-trained personnel in banking and finance are needed. The reason that this is so badly needed is because there are just too few minorities participating in banking and finance in this country. And it will provide an opportunity to help correct this condition.
Howard University's grant will be used to develop course material, establish a lecture series, and also for research and scholarships. The Dean of Howard School of Business, Milton Wilson, gives us his reaction to the grants and discusses the program in more detail.
In our initial meeting in October of 72, I think it was, I believe there was a great degree of skepticism about the sincerity of the banks. I think the banks now have removed a substantial portion of this. As a result, I think that deposits, loans will improve. I think that the students will be in turn help the banks to make the income statement look a little better. In addition, this project, as I see it, and one important aspect, will improve the level of instruction that traditionally black institutions, the faculty will get involved. They will gain greater insight into the banking industry. As a result, their teaching will be more effective and more relevant, as the students would say today, to the banking world. I see that as a great benefit that will come from this program. I think the sharing idea is a great benefit. We plan to share it in the following manner. We plan a monthly newsletter to all the traditional black schools offering education for business. We will videotape many of our lectures. All of our conferences will be on 1/2-inch videotape, and multiple copies will be made and shared with other universities.
And finally, we ask Tom Ahart, Staff Director of the ABA's Urban and Community Affairs Committee, to put the grant program in the context of other association activities in the minorities area.
In addition to the Centers for Banking Education, we have established what we call a Minority Applicant Referral Service. And this is a centralized recruiting service that we hope to identify minority college graduates who might have an interest in pursuing a banking career. And we refer all applications we receive from students and indeed from graduates with up to 3 to 5 years experience in a specialized area to ABA member banks, which subscribe to the service. We currently have about 183 banks participating in the service. The first year, we had 153 banks, so we see an increased awareness of this program and also an increased interest in it. And we've been pleased with the kind of support we've gotten from the banking community. The third effort is what we call our employment relations program generally, and we try to work with national community organizations, local community organizations, to kind of spread the word about the banking industry, and hopefully this has spillover effects into the local communities where banks exist and where banks do their business.
That concludes the April edition of Bankers Audio Forum. In May, a detailed look at the advantages and disadvantages of simple interest installment loans. This is Bill Lunney. Thank you for listening.